Bill Floor is in the studio. Good morning. Welcome back into the district. You going to take credit for the rain, are you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's one of the few things that worked right in Congress today.
Now, you were back in the district, but presume you were in San Antonio yesterday?
Actually, the day before. On Monday, I was in San Antonio and Austin, did some official events and some political events.
Right. Speaker was there, Boehner, and had a lot of things to talk about. So kind of like to get your take on that. First of all, obviously he was speaking to the Hispanic Chamber in San Antonio. So tell me your thoughts about what the speaker had to say about immigration reform.
Well, actually, there are four chambers in San Antonio, and so it was a large group,
okay.
Well over 1,000 people. And the speaker talked about the need for immigration reform, and that he has part of our Republican conference is not quite on the same page with him as to where he is, but that he thinks it's important, and he's going to continue to try to press forward. When I talk to our constituents, they tell me the same thing, that it's an important issue for them and they'd like us to deal with this. But we do have some people that are they're trying to build a visceral reaction between the words immigration reform and the word amnesty. And the only plan that I've seen in terms of immigration reform that has amnesty is a Senate bill. What we're talking about in the House doesn't include amnesty whatsoever.
So now a little bit of the politics of optics here. Obviously, the speaker's got an idea what he wants this bill to look like. Are there things that, I mean, does it move the ball forward at all if something's brought to the floor and voted down in the House saying, okay, we tried this, now let's try something that we think will pass?
I don't know that would be helpful. I think it would be better to put something on the floor when it has a reasonable chance of being successful, because if you put something on the floor and then it fails, then everybody says, see there, it failed, I don't want to ever touch it again. And so I think it's more worthwhile to continue the dialogue that we need to have predominantly on our side of the aisle, but from time to time with the other side of the aisle as well, to try to figure out what's the most we can get done to try to get this issue resolved.
Bill Floor is joining us in the studio today as Congress is in the district. The minimum wage, he continued to talk about his opposition. You and I have spoken about this, but in the interim, Mitt Romney has come out saying that he believes the minimum wage does need to be raised.
Well, you got to remember, Mitt Romney was also the candidate put RomneyCare in Massachusetts, so not all of his ideas are necessarily good ideas. Now, I think my view, Romney was actually the better of the two candidates running for president in 2012, but it didn't mean he was a perfect candidate, and so his ideas don't necessarily match up with mine. Here are the facts. The minimum wage is a starting wage for most people. Very few people spend much time at the minimum wage, and they move on. I mean, for instance, Walmart. Walmart has 1.2 million employees in this country. And less than 1% are on minimum wage, and those that do start at minimum wage spend less than 3 months there before they're given another raise. I mean, if you talk to the hotels and motels in this town, none of them have minimum wage jobs. They all start at something north of minimum wage. And, we spend far too much time talking about the minimum wage and not enough time talking about trying to improve all wages or create an economic environment where all wages can be increased, because we've just got great labor demand. That's what we're missing in this country. So when the president tries to make minimum wage a political issue, I think he's barking up the wrong tree. He needs to talk about economic growth and better paychecks for all.
Something you and I have talked about for the last couple of weeks, and he did address, and obviously in San Antonio, there are a lot of veterans there. We've now found out even this week that this problem is systemic. It was Phoenix this time, but now we're finding out system-wide. Your thoughts on the newest revelations in the veterans' problems?
Well, again, the VA has a fair – it's the second-largest bureaucracy in the federal government, and it has a lot of issues, and the issues are twofold. They're systemic and cultural. Now, this doesn't mean that every person that works at the VA is a bad person. But what it does mean is that our system in the VA and the culture in the VA are failing our veterans. And so if I were Secretary Shinseki, what I would do is I would do what Bob Gates did. I would start firing low-performing members of that bureaucracy. And I think you wouldn't have to fire too many people before everybody would get come to the conclusion that Secretary Shinseki is for real. He wants this thing to turn around. And I think you'd see a dramatic shift in attitudes. I mean, what you and I talked about last week, I believe, is, you know, the person in Phoenix that is the root cause of what we found out recently is she was a substandard performer and got moved from one position to another. And that should never happen. And so the system is broken. The culture is broken. And if I were Shinseki, I would say I'm going to start firing people today.
Do you really anticipate, because he's going to have to go before Congress. I don't know if it's this week or next, but he's going to have to do that. Do you anticipate that this is what he will say to them?
I don't know. I mean, I've not been one of the people that's called for his resignation or his termination. I really think that his heart and his all of his efforts are in the right, are directed in the right way, and he is committed to our veterans. I just don't think he's done enough yet to shake up the bureaucracy. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to see him say, give me six more months, and I will prove to you that we are going to start turning this bureaucratic maze that we call the Veterans Administration. And I'd like to see the secretary come out and say, hey, we need to think about different models providing health care and disability benefit processing to our veterans. I mean, for instance, here's what I would like to see. I would like to see if you are a veteran without a without PTSD or traumatic brain injury or polytrauma type incidents, which are all areas of excellence for the VA. If you just are trying to get a knee replacement or something like that, you have something similar to a TRICARE card, and you go to your local provider. And that way you don't have to travel to Houston or Waco to get that treatment, or Temple. You just get it from your provider here. And I think what we'll wind up doing is giving better health care to our veterans at lower cost. I'd like to see something like that. When it comes to processing disability claims, our bureaucracy that we have and the VA doesn't seem to be able to do it. Something, you know, we still have, you know, several thousand claims every year. Why don't we get somebody that's good at processing claims, like an insurance company?
Yeah. Somebody who does it all the time.
I think we'd wind up getting better adjudication of disability claims for our veterans at a cheaper cost to the taxpayer, and everybody wins.
Right. As somebody that deals with that all the time?
Sir?
As somebody that deals with that all the time with my father, the TRICARE card's a great idea. It would be so much easier.
I agree, but you remember when I ran for Congress back in 2010, I got the snot beat out of me for bringing that up.
Yeah.
And every time we brought that up to the Veteran Service Organization, I mean like the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans or the American Legion or Veterans of Foreign Wars, they would throw their hands up and say, don't touch that. Mm-hmm. And the leadership of the VA committee, our four subcommittee chairmen and our chairman, we all had a meeting with all the VSOs 2 weeks ago in Washington and broached this idea. We threw it out there thinking it would be a hand grenade coming back at us. And they all said, yeah, it's time to think of a new model, a new paradigm in terms of how we take care of our veterans in this country.
We're hearing more and more about the Benghazi special panel. We've seen, obviously, the Republicans who have been impaneled. The Democrats still talking about maybe not sitting down and being part of this. What are your thoughts there? Would that, in fact, happen?
Well, if they don't, I think it's to their benefit. I mean, it's to their
disadvantage
to not
be in this
if they don't show up. First of all, there are Democrats in this country and independents and Republicans that all want the truth. They want to know what happened in Benghazi. Why did we have lax security? How did we let four people get killed? Why did we not respond? Where was the president? Who was in the Situation Room? Why did the lies get invented about this being part of a video? Why was Susan Rice coached to go tell these lies instead of doing what everybody knew is a terrorist event? And why has nothing been done to punish the perpetrators? The American people want to know that, whether they are of any ideological persuasion. This is not a blue state issue, red state issue. This is a red, white, and blue issue. And if I were a Democrat, I would say, I want to get to the bottom of the truth. The American people need to know that. And I would jump on board and try to see this get done and see justice served.
But why, if I'm a Democrat, I say to you, gosh, amazingly, this is going to end about the first or second week in October, right before the elections. You're trying to make us look bad.
Look, if the Democrats in the House didn't do this, the Democrats in the Senate didn't do this, this happened in the White House, in the executive branch. So the Democrats in Congress are really, they should want to have this truth out. They, you know, to the best of my knowledge, none of them are over there calling the shots in the Situation Room or not calling the shots, as the case may be. None of them are in the State Department saying, ignore the security advice that we received. So I would say, you know, if I were a Democrat in Congress doing my constitutional duty, I would want to take part in this oversight process.
Finally, what kind of lease car were you driving when you gave it up? Because I understand you gave up your lease car.
Right? Well, for 3 years, I had a Chevy Equinox. It was the the biggest car you could get under Nancy Pelosi's greenhouse gas emission rules.
If you were a Republican or what? Greenhouse rules.
Yeah, Nancy
okay.
Pelosi put these rules in effect where it limited the size of the car. Okay. No, of course, she rides around in an SUV.
Well, Neugebauer's got to have something bigger than that if he's using $1,300 a month. But anyway,
We had a three-year lease on this Chevy Equinox that we use for official purposes. Mm-hmm. And, there were a couple of there are some people that watch these things, and they're constantly nagging at people that had lease cars. It's an approved expense.
Right.
I mean, this had to be approved by the House Council.
Right.
And there are, I don't know, probably 100 members that have them. And I just decided, there's no need to get beat up for something like that. So I, for $458 a month, it wasn't worth it.
You got your own ride. Yeah,
so we bought our own ride. We terminated the lease at the end, or let the lease expire at the end of the lease, and I bought my own car, and we use that.
All right. You're back next week. What's on the agenda?
Oh, well, next week we have some more appropriations bills coming up. And then we also have, this past week that we were in session, we passed a charter school bill to try to improve the charter school program. We also passed a permanent extension of the R&D credit. Next week, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about human trafficking, which is it's just a human disaster that not many people pay attention to, but it is it's a scourge on this country. You're going to see a lot more about that as we come through. I'm meeting with the FBI today here and Brian about that to try to figure out how big the issue is here in District 17. And you're going to see us try to address this issue head on. We've got five or six bills that will be on the floor next week.
Okay. Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. We have the pleasure of having him in the studio this week. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. As always, thanks for the time.
Great to be here. I'd ask our listeners to continue praying for our country, our military men and women, and our first responders.
All right. Thank you.